Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good morning, everyone. It is Saturday, November the 13th, 2021. It is currently 12:04 p.m. Central Time. So if I said good morning, I was incorrect. Good afternoon, everyone. It is Saturday, November the 13th, 2021. It is currently 12:04 p.m. Central Time. And you know where I'm at, the Empty Sanctuary, Victory Baptist Church, Ovalo, Texas. And it is time once again for us to do a little bit of exercise, Bible study exercise. So that means I need you to get up, have a Bible, a pencil, a notebook, and we have a lot to do. Now, let me just say this right from the beginning. This morning, or now this afternoon, I'm having, for those who do not know, I have a seizure disorder because of something related to anthrax, military career came down. I won't go through the whole long story, but I have a seizure disorder, which obviously includes neurological issues. And I'm having one of those days where things are just not quite, it's hard for me to explain it to people. It's like, I feel like I'm a little bit underwater and I can see the surface, but I just can't quite get there. Like I'm trying to swim to get to the surface, but everything's just kind of murky and everything's a little bit kind of cloudy. And I don't have clarity of thought like I typically would. Just I'm struggling with maybe trying to get some words across. So I'm going to do my best to try to get us through this Bible study exercise. I ask that you show a little bit of patience with me. If I am not clear or if I stumble over some things, please forgive me. I don't want to make any excuses. It's my responsibility to sit down in front of a microphone and to deliver teaching to the best of my ability. So I don't want to make any excuses for any mistakes. Any mistakes I make are on me. I'm not blaming them on the fact that I have a seizure disorder. It's on me. I'm responsible. So I'm going to do my very best to try to get us through this, and hopefully it will be beneficial. I don't want to delay because it's Saturday. So this week's Bible study really kind of ends today, and tomorrow we start a new week of Bible study. And I want to make sure that I try to end this week with something positive and something good and something beneficial, because my job to get you the best teaching that I can. It's my responsibility to bring you the best teaching that I can. And I feel like we barely even scratched the surface this week. This week, we all know what we're studying. We're studying Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 6, right? That's what we've been studying this week. I've given you assignments. I've tried to really emphasize the doctrine of imputation, which I think is so key to understanding this text. I've given you a lot of things to consider and a lot of things to look at. We've kind of taken a slight detour, and we are looking at a writing from Thomas Watson, a Puritan from the 1600s, which I think has been very beneficial and very powerful. I didn't know how much of that I was going to cover, but someone listening emailed me and said they want to hear more. So obviously then their wishes moved to the top of the list of things to do. So we're going to end this week's Bible study really with going back to Thomas Watson. All right. Thank you, Heather. Heather knows about the situation that I'm currently going through, and she's praying for me. So I greatly appreciate that. And so hopefully, though, before this is over, I can do the best that I can do. All right. It's that idea that hopefully I'm going to pray this, that while I am very, 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 maybe I don't want to over exaggerate, even though I am weak here. That's a man thing, right? I don't want to acknowledge that I'm weak. Just saying this word, I am, I can't say the words, but as a man, I don't want to acknowledge it. As I am very weak right now, I pray that then obviously God will be strong, and that through my weakness, through my foolishness, something of great spiritual benefit can occur through this teaching and this Bible study exercise on this Saturday afternoon, not morning. See, I've already made a mistake even just getting started this Saturday afternoon. And I'm going to be very sensitive to the mistakes. I am going to be very sensitive because whenever I go through this, I get very sensitive. It's hard to explain. It's like being in a fog and I want it to go away. Hopefully, it's going to go away. So are we ready to do this Bible study exercise? We are now, just to tell you where we're going. Tomorrow, if for those who are using the curriculum, and please, if you're not using the curriculum, please sign up. Go to theologycentral.net, go to the blog section, scroll down. I don't know how many pages down now that it is. Find the entry for Daily Discipleship Guide. Sign up. We've got a very good group right now. The group is growing, and I'm very pleased that people are using the curriculum. But next, or tomorrow, starting tomorrow, we will be looking at Confidence After We Fall, Unit 2, Session 5, Confidence After We Fall. And I don't know where the curriculum is going to go, but I've got some interesting things planned, and it's just, again, divine providence. Yesterday, on one of my podcast apps, I received a notification for a new podcast episode from a Bible college that I follow their podcast. And in chapel, I guess Friday or Thursday, I don't know, sometime this week in chapel, they did a message from chapel about three things we learned from failure, or three very important facts about failure. And it really deals with this concept of falling and failing as a believer. So we're going to definitely bring in that audio and use that. I started listening to it, and then I stopped, and I kind of started going my own direction in some notes. So we'll bring that in. It just fits in perfectly. So that's what we're going to be talking about starting tomorrow. Confidence After We Fall. But today, we are still in Unit 2, Session 4, and we're dealing with confidence in seasons of uncertainty. Confidence in seasons of uncertainty, Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 6. I wanted you to read it. I wanted you to look at the doctrine of imputation, but most importantly, I guess for now, what's most important right now is one phrase found in Genesis 15, verse 1, and let me just read it. Genesis chapter 15, verse 1. After these things, now these things refer to the things that occurred in Genesis 14, the battle of the kings, Abram rescuing Lot, Melchizedek showing up, the king of Sodom showing up, and Abram refusing to take anything from the king of Sodom. Those are all the things that occur in Genesis 14. After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram. After those things, God reveals himself and speaks to Abram. And he tells him the following. Number one, fear not. Number two, I am thy shield. And number three, I am your exceeding great reward. Now, those three things are directly related to the things that happened in chapter 14, and you can draw an arrow. Fear not goes to chapter 14, verses 1 through 11, the battle of the kings. Hey, right now in your world, it's chaos. People are battling. There's war. There's fighting. Fear not. Number two, I am your shield goes to Genesis 14, 12 through 17, because Abram, to rescue Lot, he had to engage in a military battle with people. That could make then Abram a target. So he's like, I will be your shield. And then I am your exceeding great reward is Genesis 14, 18 through 24, primarily focusing on the fact that the king of Sodom offered Abraham a lot of things, and he turned all of it down. So God is saying, hey, you may turn down what the world is offering you. Remember, I am your great reward. So Genesis 15, verse 1, those three things directly relate to Genesis 14, the battle of the kings, the rescue of Lot, and the king of Sodom showing up and Abram refusing to take anything from him. There's a direct correlation. Now, I believe those three things have a historical application right there to Abram, but those three things have an application to us. And the reason they have an application to us is because of the doctrine of imputation, which is mentioned in Genesis 15:6, where it is stated, and let me just read it. Genesis 15:6, speaking of Abram, he believed in the Lord and he counted it to him for righteousness. Now we know that truth of imputed righteousness that comes by faith is applied to all of us in the New Testament. I believe it's because of God's imputed right, the imputed righteousness of Christ to my account, that I can have no fear because I have the imputed righteousness of Christ. I don't have to fear judgment. I don't have to fear hell. I don't have to fear the wrath of God. I can fear not because of the imputed righteousness. I have a shield to protect me from the accusations of the enemy. No one can lay a charge at God's elect because it is God who justifies. So I have a shield to protect me because I have the imputed righteousness. And because I have the imputed righteousness, it means that God is my exceeding great reward. I think imputation, it draws, we can draw the arrows from those things to Genesis 15:6, because that's how it becomes applicable to us. The originally, these things have specific historical context to Abram and what was happening in his life. Now, there's more we could go through this, but our focus, if I don't lose my voice here, there we go. Had to clear my voice. Genesis chapter 15, the part we're going to focus on is in verse 1, where God tells Abram that I am your exceeding great reward. We are focusing on that because of the writing of Thomas Watson, 1600s, a Puritan writer. He wrote a little article, I guess you could say, a discussion about this very concept. And we are taking it apart. And someone out there who's listening wanted to hear more. So that's what we're going to do. So if you have access to theologycentral.net right now, you can open up theologycentral.net and we will go to the article. Here we go. Theologycentral.net. Go to the blog section. And here is the article entitled, God is His People's Great Reward. God is His People's Great Reward. Let's go through this. There is much to consider. I'm gonna give us a little bit of a review to get us all on the same page. Here we go. God is His People's Great Reward by Thomas Watson. I am your exceeding great reward. Genesis 15:1. God Himself is His People's reward! ! Thomas Watson wants to drive this point home. Not only was God Abram's great reward, He is all of our great reward. And we have to ask ourselves, do we truly live that way? Do we truly embrace that truth that He is my great reward, or do we have a tendency? I'm going to repeat this a number of times. Do we have a tendency not to see God as our exceeding great reward, but to see God as a means to an end? Or let me state it another way. Do we see God as simply the thing to get us to the reward that we think is exceedingly great? We see God simply as a means to the exceedingly great reward. I think sometimes we see God as a means to, well, other things, and we forget God. We focus on what God can give. We don't focus on God. We see God as the giver, and we forget God being, in a sense, the ultimate gift. All right, so let's go through this because there's a lot of things. Now, because God is our exceeding great reward, Thomas Watson says, there are four things in this concept that we need to understand. Four things spoken of. And those four things are, number one, nothing besides God can be the saint's reward. Nothing can be your reward other than God. Or let me state it this way. If you see anything else as being your exceeding great reward and it's not God, you are missing the whole thing. You're missing the point. And that distraction, that misunderstanding, makes you spiritually vulnerable. Let me articulate it this way. Eve, instead of seeing God as her reward, she seemed to see the garden as her reward. And when she realized there was something in the garden that she could not have, forget God being her reward, she wanted what she could not have. She looked for something other than God. She became, and you can blame Satan utilizing the serpent to get her. He distracted her from God. Instead of looking to God as, no, I have God, so I don't need anything else. He was like, look, you don't have this and God is holding out on you. But it should be like, but I have God. God is my exceeding great reward. The minute I become focused on anything else is my great reward, I will find myself in spiritual danger. I become spiritually vulnerable. If God is my great reward, that provides a spiritual protection. But the minute I stop looking to God, even if it's not something sinful, like, okay, I have God. God is the means to an end. So God should do this in my life. He should do this. He should do this. And when those things go wrong in your life, you will become spiritually vulnerable to discouragement, depression, a lack of contentment, bitterness, and anger because God didn't do what you wanted. But were you looking for God to give you something else, or were you looking to God as your great reward? This is such a very, I cannot even talk to you how important this principle is. Nothing besides God can be the saint's reward. Number two, how God is their reward. And number three, how God comes to be their reward. And then number four, wherein the exceeding greatness of this reward consists. What makes God as our reward great, exceedingly great? So let's go through these three points briefly. And then today we're going to focus on number four. Number one, nothing besides God can be the saint's reward. Thomas Watson wants to drive this point home by looking at two things that cannot be our reward. Number one, nothing on this earth can be our reward. Nothing on this earth. When we look to earthly things, material things as a reward, we are completely missed the point. And again, so many times people see God as a means to an end, and that end is earthly things like health, wealth, prosperity, whatever the case may be. Now, that's the prosperity gospel, which we will rightly condemn, but I think in many evangelical churches, if they're honest with ourselves, all of us, just forget evangelical churches, all of us, there's a time that we're like, wait, God, I'm following you, so why is this happening? Why is this happening in my life? Why this, this, this? I want, in a sense, my reward of following you should be these things in life should be better. They should work better for me. They should, things should not go contrary to what I want. And we're looking for an earthly thing, an earthly reward, an earthly benefit. But only God is our reward, not anything on this earth. And then here was the powerful quote that I've just written down everywhere this week. God never intended that we should dig happiness out of the earth, which he has cursed. God never intended that we should dig happiness out of the earth, which he has cursed. We've got to stop looking to the earth and looking to God as being our ultimate reward, our exceedingly great reward, and we have to see that, live that, and believe that, all right? Not only is nothing on earth our reward, heaven itself is not a saint's reward. Psalm 73:25, whom have I in heaven but you? Don't look to heaven, look to God. We see heaven as our great reward. I think sometimes we see heaven as our exceeding great reward. That is focusing on something other than God. God is your exceeding great reward, and we have to see and understand that. How is God his people's reward? By bestowing himself upon us. He gives himself to us. He becomes our God. We become his people. He bestows himself upon us by grace, right? That's number two. Number three, how does God come to be his people's reward? How does it happen that he can become our reward? It's done through Jesus Christ. It's done through his blood. It's through his sacrifice. It's through the doctrine of imputation. That's how God becomes my great reward. By grace, faith, through Christ. Then number four, this is where we're going to spend the rest of our time. Wherein the exceeding greatness of this reward consists. Now, This is what Thomas Watson wants us to understand. It's one thing to say that God is your exceeding great reward, but what makes it so great? What is the greatness of this reward? Now, you would say, well, it's God, so obviously it is great because it is God. What Thomas Watson, he wants to break it down a little bit more so that we can truly understand and appreciate the exceeding greatness of the reward. If we see the exceeding greatness of it, then we cannot be distracted and tempted by all the other substitutes. We must constantly be reminded of the exceeding greatness of it. The minute we forget the greatness of that reward, we will look to something else. Again, back to Eve in the garden. Satan was able to distract her from, hey, look, look, he ultimately got her attention on that tree. Now, she was already standing there looking at it, right? She saw in that tree something she desired to have, something that was good, something that was pleasant. She became focused on that tree, not on the one who created all of the trees. She forgot God. She forgot her creator. She forgot that he should have been her exceeding great reward. She had relationship and fellowship with the creator, but he got her focus on the creation. She placed her focus on the creation. And as a result, well, she wanted something that God had forbidden. Because that's, the second we forget God, the exceeding greatness of God being our reward, then we'll look for a substitute. We'll look for something else. And that tends to get us in all kinds of spiritual trouble. There's a lot of directions we could go with that, all right? So here's what he wants us to understand. So what basically makes up the fact, or what makes that this is an exceeding great reward? Here's the first thing. Number one, God is a satisfying reward. The first thing we need to understand is that God himself is a satisfying reward. Therefore, we should find complete satisfaction within God. For those who don't know, I've already tried to do this once and I had all kinds of problems with satisfaction. So if I mess up the word, I'll just continue to try to say it until I get it right, all right? Because I'm having some issues today. All right. So for some, I don't know if we truly believe that God is an all-satisfying reward. I don't know if we truly find satisfaction within God. There's something I think that's built into our sinful nature that is not satisfied with God. We look for satisfaction for things that pertains to the flesh, things that pertain to this world. But we have to see that the reason God is such an exceeding great reward is it should be a satisfying reward. All of our satisfaction should come from God. Anytime we perceive a lack of contentment or a lack of satisfaction in our life, it's because we are not looking to God as our exceeding great reward, and nothing else will truly satisfy. That's why we have famous songs within the history of music. I can't get no satisfaction, Rolling Stones. I still haven't found what I'm looking for, U2. I could go through song after song after song throughout music history that demonstrates this feeling. I'm not satisfied. I'm not happy. I'm not content, because you will never truly find satisfaction, never truly be satisfied looking anywhere else other than God. God is the only thing that can truly satisfy. That's the whole point of the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is someone's diary of trying to find satisfaction in everything in this earth. And he comes up with the idea, he comes to the conclusion, meaningless, 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 meaningless. Vanity, 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 all is vanity. It's all useless and meaningless. Everything under the sun. God is the only thing that can satisfy. But for some weird reason, theologically, I know that God is my exceeding great reward, but because of my sinful nature, I look for something else. And a lack of contentment in me demonstrates that I am rejecting God as being the all-satisfying reward. What makes God such an exceeding great reward is it should be an all-satisfying one. Now, do you see God as your exceeding great reward? Do you truly see that? And do you find true satisfaction and contentment in him? I will argue that we don't. We say we do We don't. We may lift up our hands in a praise song saying God is all satisfying. My satisfaction comes from him. Some kind of word similar to that. And then we walk around all week complaining and not happy and not satisfied because of, well, this situation or this person or this. Wouldn't it be wonderful that in all Christian marriages, that husband and wife did not look for satisfaction from their spouse, but they found their satisfaction in God? And if they both find their satisfaction in God, there'd never be a lack of being satisfied in their marriage. I think there's some truth to that. Now, I know people say, well, that's just ridiculous, but if God is the all-satisfying reward and satisfaction can be found in him, then satisfaction in marriage would be not found in our spouse, not found in our children, not found in our career, not found in our money. It would be found in God. So I think it's easy to say God is the all-satisfying reward and then turn around and go, however, I'm not satisfied. I can't get no satisfaction. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. There's a lot of Christians who still haven't found what I'm looking for. There's still a lot of Christians walking around saying, I can't get no satisfaction. They may condemn the Rolling Stones lifestyle and condemn many of their lyrics and condemn many things about them, but they sure did adopt the philosophy because I think a lot of Christians try to find satisfaction in church. They're not satisfied in church. Is it because you're not satisfied in church? Because you're not finding your satisfaction in God? Now, I'm not saying you should be satisfied if your church is not equipping you and teaching scripture. You get the idea, but I think sometimes people are looking for something else. They're looking for something else to give them the satisfaction that can only come from God. Now, Thomas Watson says it this way. God is a satisfying reward, Genesis 17:1. I am God Almighty. The word for Almighty signifies him who has sufficiency. Our sufficiency is to be found in God. Our satisfaction is to be found in God. What is satisfying is God himself. He is all sufficient. Do you find your sufficiency in God? Or listen, do you look to God as a means to satisfaction? Now, there's a difference there. Because if you look at God as a means to satisfaction, this is the way it's sometimes sold in the evangelical world. See, if you get God, then you'll always have a friend or you'll have a purpose. You'll have a meaning. Now, I understand there's some truth to that, but you have to find that it's God himself who is the exceeding great reward and who is satisfying because you have God. But if you look for what God will give you when God doesn't, in a sense, when the, you know, spiritual vending machine does not spit out at the bottom what you want, you're no longer going to be satisfied in your Christian life, and you're going to get frustrated and you're going to get upset because things don't always work out the way you want in your Christian life, right? I've talked about it today. Look, if I look to God, I want you to just, I'm going to bring in my current situation today. I'm obviously having some technical difficulties because of my seizure disorder and because of the neurological problems that flow from it, right? Just for some weird reason, it just hit me today. I don't know why. I was fine, and now all of a sudden, everything went wacky, okay? Can't explain it. Well, guess what? I'm a believer in God. God has not taken away my seizure disorder. He has not improved my neurological issues. They are there. They are the thorn in my flesh. They are my weakness. At times they are it's very discouraging. At times I am not satisfied. At times I do not find satisfaction in the fact that I have to deal with all of the neurological issues, and I can get very frustrated. But my exceeding great reward is not a God who's going to take away my seizure disorder. It's in God himself. Sometimes we see God as a means to, if he gives me, so we focus on these other things and we think I'm satisfied because I have God and now he's going to take care of all of these things. But when all of a sudden you're, you know, sitting at home eating and your servants come in and say, hey, guess what? This just happened and all of your family just died and someone just broke in and stole all of your property. Yeah, I'm borrowing from the book of Job. And just one bad thing after another happens, you may find yourself going, Well, what's the point? Well, the point is God is your exceeding great reward. Not what God will do for you or give you, He Himself. Do we find our satisfaction in God, or do we find satisfaction in the gifts that He gives us? I'm not saying we should not be thankful for the gifts and the blessings He gives us, but we always have to see God as the exceeding great reward. He is all satisfying, and we must find our satisfaction in Him. I'm really trying to emphasize that point because this is such a powerful discussion here. Now, I'm going to read everything he has to say here. God is a satisfying reward, Genesis 17:1. I am God Almighty. The word for Almighty signifies Him who has sufficiency. God is a whole ocean of blessedness, so that the soul, while it is bathing in it, cries out in divine ecstasy, I have enough. Here is fullness, but no excess. Do you say, I have enough? Do you wake up every day and say, I have enough? Here is fullness because God is my exceeding great reward. Now, these words to me make Genesis 15 verses like 2 and 3 so just absolutely astounding to me, because if God is the exceeding great reward and He's all satisfying, as soon as Abram is given this revelation, his very next words are, so what are you going to give me? Which is absolutely mind-boggling to me, but it demonstrates the reality that we all do the same thing. God is your exceeding great reward. Amen. That was a great sermon, Pastor. And then we get in the car to demonstrate that we're not satisfied and we need this and we want this. And then we start complaining and grumbling and murmuring, which is pretty much the constant state of all of us. Right? Okay. I cannot say I've truly ever said, I have enough. Here is fullness. I don't think I've ever said I have enough of anything. All right. He goes on. Psalm 17:15, I quote, I shall be satisfied when I awake with your likeness. When I awake out of the sleep of death, having my soul embellished with the illustrious beams of your glory, I shall be satisfied. In God, there is not only sufficiency, but redundancy. Not only the fullness of the vessel, but the fullness of the fountain. When the whole world was defaced, Noah had the copy and emblem of it in the ark. In God, this ark of blessedness, are all good things virtually to be found. Therefore, Jacob, having God for his reward, could say, I have enough, or as it is in the original, I have all, Genesis 33:11. God is all marrow and fatness. He is such an exuberant reward as exceeds our very faith. If the queen of Sheba's heart fainted within her to see all of King Solomon's glory, what would it be? What would it have done to have beheld the astonishing and magnificent reward which God bestows upon his favorites? Now, a lot of poetic language, which is common of the Puritans, very good at doing that. I like to sometimes maybe remove the poetry, remove the poetic language, and just bring it down to something very, you know, as J. Vernon McGee was famous for saying, I'm going to put the, you know, the cookies down on the lower shelf where everyone can get to them, okay? So I'm just going to break it down and trying to be as blunt as I can be. God is our exceeding great reward, and our satisfaction must be found in Him. Alone. Not in what He gives, but in Him. Not as Him as a means to an end, but He is the end. And anything else He blesses us with is amazing and great and all because of grace. But if all of that is removed tomorrow, God is my exceeding great reward. If all I have is God, will I be satisfied? He is supposed to be the all-satisfying God. So again, because that is a reality, He's the Almighty, He is sufficient, then how do we understand in Genesis 15 that after he's been told, after Abraham was immediately after he is told that God is his exceeding great reward, his very next words are this, Genesis 15:2. And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eleazar of Damascus? And Abram said, behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. Now, I don't want to place condemnation upon Abraham where it's not justified, but at the same time, I don't want to ignore what is happening here. I don't know if we can condemn Abram for this. I don't think we can praise Abram for this. I think it's just a very real, okay, God, you're my exceeding great reward. Wonderful. What are you going to give me? What? You made promises. Where is the fulfillment of it? I mean, all of this great that don't fear, you're my shield, you're my exceeding great reward. But what does that mean practically? I think we are sometimes like, okay, God is my, I know I did this when I was a young Christian. Okay, I believe in God. All right, I believe in God. I'm a brand new Christian. Wait a minute. My mom's 39 years of age and she's dying. It all happened within hours, basically. But I mean, basically, she's dead. Well, wait. What's the point of following God if he can't even help me out with my mother? Okay, well, what's the point of God that he couldn't even keep my mom alive enough so that her and I could reconcile our very, 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 very broken relationship? But I was seeing God as a means to an end, that God was going to fix the relationship with my mom. God was going to fix everything in my family. I was going to have a good family. But no. It didn't get, not only did my mom die, everything went from bad to worse. And it got, I mean, it was just, I mean, man, the damage and scars left from that family are long lasting. And I could write a book about everything. Just look at the lives of my brother and my sister. Give me a break. That thing was horrific. And so I became disillusioned and discouraged. And then I had to realize that no, it's not, God is not the means to the end. It's God himself. He's my exceeding great reward. All right. Now, let's continue. God is a satisfying reward. I almost want to stop there. I really do, because that's such a powerful point. I just want you to, anytime you feel discontentment inside of you, it's because you're looking somewhere else for contentment. You're looking somewhere else for satisfaction. You're looking somewhere else to be satisfied. Now, I want us to make sure we think about this correctly. I'm not saying that, I guess in some ways I am saying that, look, life at times is going to throw things at you that's not satisfying. A lot of times your life throws things at you and you're going to be like, you know, there's no satisfaction here. There's a lack of contentment. But I think all of that is because we're looking at it from a fleshly, earthly perspective. I don't know exactly, there's no secret to truly understanding God as your exceeding great reward other than constantly reminding yourself of that truth. Right? That's one of those paragraphs that I could read for like every day for a year and still not appreciate all that's being said there. Let's go through another one. God is a suitable reward. The soul, being spiritual, must have something comparable and suitable to make it happy. I want you to hear that. The soul, being spiritual, must have something comparable and suitable to make it happy. And that is God. Light is no more suitable to the eye, or light is no more suitable to the eye, nor melody to the ear, than God to the soul. Light is suitable to the eye, because that's how we would perceive it. Melody, music, is suitable to the ear, because that's how you understand. It's not the eye. It's not, music is not suitable to the eye. It's suitable to the ear, right? That's what the point he's trying to drive home. So God is the same way. He is suitable to the soul. He's the suitable reward to the soul. The only thing that suitable for the soul is God, not material things, God. He pours spiritual blessings into the soul. Spiritual blessings. Spiritual blessings. So much of Christianity seems to focus on almost an earthly, fleshly blessings, but it's spiritual blessings that is what we ultimately need and what will ultimately bring satisfaction. Ephesians, he says, God pours spiritual blessings into the soul, Ephesians 1:3. He enriches it with grace, feasts it with his love, and crowns it with heavenly dignity. God is the only suitable reward because as a spiritual being, nothing else will ultimately satisfy or bring contentment, bring satisfaction. It's only God himself. He is the suitable reward. God is a satisfying reward, a suitable reward. Next, God is a pleasant reward. How far do I want to go with this? In a sense, I'm going to do some paraphrasing here because I don't have, that's a longer paragraph and I wanted to get further. Think of this. He is the essence of delight. I'll go with that. All right. Because I don't want to mess up another word, right? He is the essence of delight. He is all beauty and love. To be feeding upon the thoughts of God is delicious. Psalm 104:34. My meditation of him shall be sweet. Your meditation of God is sweet when you see him as your exceeding great reward. I think a lot of people, a lot of Christians, I don't know if they can ever truly say that their meditation upon God is sweet. I think a lot of Christians just don't find sweetness in meditating on the things of God. They don't find contentment in it. They don't find satisfaction in it. They don't find pleasure. And it's always like, what? And something is horribly wrong spiritually, but it maybe they don't see God as being, well, yeah, I don't know. Something just goes wrong when Christians don't see it that way. But I think you probably know lots of people you go to church with who don't really seem to find much delight in it. It goes on to say, it is delightful to the bee to suck the flower. So by holy musing, to suck out some of the sweetness in God. The bee finds pleasure in going to the flower, right? We should find great pleasure and, in a sense, meditating and bringing out the things from God's word, from that time of communion with God. To suck out some of the sweetness in God carries a secret delight in it. To have a prospect of God only by faith is pleasant, 1 Peter 1:8. In whom believing you rejoice. Then what will the joy of vision be when we shall have clear personal sight of him and be laid in the bosom of divine love? Is God so sweet a reward and an affliction? 2 Corinthians 7:4, I'm exceedingly joyful in all our trouble. Philip, Count of Hesse, said that in his confinement, he had the divine consolation of the martyrs. Then what a delicious reward will God be in heaven? This may be far better felt than expressed. The godly, entering upon their celestial reward, are said to enter into the joy of their Lord. Matthew 25:21. Oh, amazing! The saints enter into God's own joy. They have not only the joy which God bestows, but the joy which God enjoys. So the God, there should be, because God is our exceeding great reward, there should be a pleasure. It's pleasant. God should be a source of pleasure for us. We should find pleasure in God. We find pleasure in everything else. Let's be honest. We find pleasure in so many things other than God. I don't know how many, I would be interesting to know how many Christians can honestly say, hey, time with God's word, meditating, Bible study, I find great pleasure in that. I find great satisfaction in that. Well, the reality is he's the only suitable reward. He's the only thing that can bring that. But I don't want to get Gnostic here, but we almost, so much of our existence is at the fleshly level, and we're so, our thinking, our perception is so fleshly that we don't realize that the reason we're not truly satisfied is not because we need to satisfy the flesh some more or give the flesh what it wants, because our satisfaction needs to come from God. Now, obviously, we find great pleasure and satisfaction in the flesh, not denying that, not saying that that satisfaction in the flesh is wrong. We just have to realize it's not the true satisfaction, and the true pleasure only comes from the only suitable thing that can, our true essence is in us. Our spiritual essence is what really we have to focus. We focus so much on the flesh that we forget the spiritual, and it's the spiritual that will bring the true essence, our true feeling of satisfaction and contentment and pleasure. But we stop with the flesh. We don't ever get down to that deeper level. And I think there's some truth to that. Next, we're at 45 minutes. God is a transcendent reward. The painter going to paint the picture of Helena, not being able to draw her beauty as in life, drew her face covered with a veil. So when we speak of God's excellencies, we must draw a veil. He is so supereminent of reward that we cannot set him forth in all his luster and magnificence. Put the whole world in a scale with him, and it is if you should weigh a feather with a mountain of gold. God is far better than all other things put together. He is better than the world and better than heaven. He is the original cause of all good things. Nothing is sweet without him. He perfumes and sanctifies our comforts. He turns the venison into a blessing. God is a transcendent reward. So he transcends everything else. He is greater than everything else. Any other reward or any other thing that I can find, God transcends it. He's greater. So you take the greatest pleasure, the greatest satisfaction, the greatest thing that you can experience from a fleshly perspective, God transcends that. Now, this is very theoretical, and it's very hard to know how to live this out, because I would struggle greatly with these concepts. Now, I am very painfully aware that if I look to anything else, I ultimately will become discouraged, despondent, and discontent. That is true. So I know looking to God is the only source of contentment and satisfaction. I know that to be true. Doing that is difficult because I live at such a fleshly level that I wake up and I'm like, what will please my flesh today? And I think that that's going to ultimately please, but it's a bottomless pit that will never truly be satisfied, because the only thing that will truly satisfy us is God being our exceeding great reward. I think that's very important to understand that. So he is a satisfying reward. He's a suitable reward. He is a pleasant reward. He is a transcendent reward. And then God is an infinite reward. And being infinite, two things follows. So God is an infinite reward. And here's what follows from this concept. The reward cannot come to us by way of merit. Can we merit God? Can finite creatures merit an infinite reward? This is very profound here. So because God is an infinite reward, the reward cannot come to us by way of merit, because can we merit God? Can the finite creatures merit an infinite reward? And the answer is obviously no. We can't merit this reward. This is a reward that comes to us by grace. It's not a reward that we earn. It's a reward that comes to us by grace. God being an infinite reward, there can be no defect or scantiness in it. All right? There is no lack in that which is infinite. So I guess the main thing to take away from this, that he's an infinite reward, is that there is no defect in it. There is no lack in it. Because he's an infinite reward, It's not missing anything. There's no, it's not broken. It's not defective. It's not missing anything. There's no lack in it in any way, shape, or form. Some may ask, is God sufficient for every individual saint? Yes, if the sun, which is but a finite creature, disperses its light to the universe, then much more God, who is infinite, distributes glory to the whole number of the elect. Every individual Christian has a membership in God. As every person enjoys the whole sun to himself, so every believer possesses the whole God to himself. The Lord has land enough to give all his heirs. Throw 1,000 buckets into the sea, and there is water enough in the sea to fill them. Though there are millions of saints and angels, there is enough in God to fill them. God is an infinite reward, and though he is continually giving out his fullness to others, yet he is not the less his glory is imparted, not impaired. It is a distribution without being diminished in any way, shape, or form. So because God is infinite, we cannot merit it. And because God is infinite, there is no defect or lack in what God is completely sufficient for you and for me. That's some powerful stuff right there. And then, there's no way I'm going to finish this. All right, we're going to have to stop here. I wanted to get more. The next one is honorable, then everlasting. There's two more, honorable and everlasting. I want to get us this because we may not have any ability to come back to this. So this is like my last chance to do this. God is an honor, because, you know, tomorrow we start a new week of Bible study and we move on. God is an honorable reward. Honor is the height of men's ambitions. Aristotle calls it the greatest of blessings. Alas, worldly honor is but a pleasing fancy. It often has a speedy burial, but to enjoy God is the head of honor. I love that, that worldly honor often has a speedy burial. That is a powerful quote. Worldly honor has often a speedy burial. Man, you can be honored by people. They can think you're great. And the next minute, you're not honorable. They don't honor you, and it's buried very quickly. But to enjoy God is the head of honor. What greater dignity than to be taken up into communion with the God of glory and to possess a kingdom with him and seated above. So, well, he goes on to get very poetical there. But instead of going into all of that, that God is an honorable reward, that we should find great honor that God has bestowed himself upon us. We should find great honor that the infinite God has given an infinite reward to finite creatures, that there is an honor in that. That's the greatest honor. The greatest honor is that I have God. I should not seek for other honor because I've got. Now, this is very important for a preacher. I can't speak for other people. Well, maybe even your profession. We like to be honored, right? Let's be honest. We like to be honored. I'm just going to be as blunt and as fleshly as I can be here to just explain it. A pastor likes to be told, great sermon. A pastor likes to know that people find that his teaching is awesome and great and wonderful. You like that praise because you like that honor, right? And your job, you like to be honored. You like to be rewarded. You find great satisfaction in those things. As a wife, you want to be honored for all of your contributions to the home. We all want honor. We all want that honor. We live for honor. We live to be exalted. We live for preeminence. Even though people who may be very humble, they're still, you like that to be honored. You like that. You like that praise. Now, I'm not saying I think it's very important to offer encouragement to people. I think to offer honor and praise, there is something about that is very encouraging and helpful and right. But for a Christian, we should find that the honor that matters most to us is that God is our exceeding great reward, and there is great honor in that. What other honor could I ever want than God, the infinite God, the eternal God, rewarding me with himself, adopting me into his family, that I'm his child, and he's bestowed upon me in Christ all spiritual blessings, and he's given me the absolute perfect righteousness of his son. What more honor could I want? What more pleasure could I want? What else do I need to satisfy me? Again, it's a lack of satisfaction in God, a lack of contentment in God is what leads to all of our, it's the very essence of sin. All right. And then he goes on to say here, I'll just read this paragraph. A great heir, while in a foreign land, may be despised, but in his own country, he is held in veneration. Here on earth, the people of God are as princes in a disguise. But they shall have honor enough in heaven when they shall be clothed with white robes and sit with Christ upon his throne. God is an everlasting reward. Mortality is the flaw of earthly things. They are in their fruition, suffering, and in their duration, dying. They are like that metal which glass is made of, which when it shines brightest, it's nearest melting, but God is an eternal reward. Eternity can be measured by year, cannot be measured by years nor ages. Eternity makes glory weighty, Psalm 48:14. This God is our God forever and ever. O you saints of God, your praying and repenting are but for a while, but your reward is forever. As long as God is God, he will be rewarding you. Hosea 2:19, I will betroth you unto me forever. God marries himself to his people, and this admits of no divorce. God's love for his elect is as unchangeable as his love is for Christ. Psalm 73:26, my portion forever. This portion cannot be spent because it is infinite, nor can it be lost because it is eternal. It is an everlasting reward. We never lose it. It's there because it is God. Everything else in this world is not everlasting. Honor, money, fame, pleasure, satisfaction, anything earthly, it's going to go away. It no longer is there. So many times people, one of the things I hate, I guess I'll end with this, and this is my own personal thing, so I'm not here to bash anybody, but this is just a little pet peeve that I have. It's more than a pet peeve. It's an absolute, like, it drives me crazy. I hate anything where nostalgia is a part of it. I don't like when people get nostalgic about their high school days or nostalgic about this. I hate looking back. I hate looking back. Even though as much as I hate it, I will find myself doing it, but I try. I hate when, you know, I quote lots of songs, but as Bruce Springsteen says, you don't want to sit around when you get older telling people boring stories about the glory days, okay? Boring stories of the glory days. A lot of people sit around. That's all they ever want to talk about. Remember when I was in high school? Remember this. Back. They look back. And you know what all those boring stories of glory days tells me? All that nostalgia and, you know, always wanting to look back. Only listen to old music. Everything is about the past. It drives me crazy. It just tells me this, that no matter how glorious those days were, they were temporary. No matter how awesome those times were, they didn't last. They were gone. There were many things in my past that I absolutely loved. You don't even know how much I loved every Friday night, every Saturday night. In fact, any other night of the week, I would be there in the dance club. I loved the I had notoriety, had at least a small taste of fame. Everyone knew me in the club. Everyone would watch me dance. I loved the club. Just put me in the club and you don't even understand. It's just, there was like a, from an earthly sense, there was great pleasure. There was great, there was a great satisfaction that came from. I loved everyone's praise about how great a dancer you were. I love the fact that, you know, I won my first dance contest when I was super young. I loved that there was just something about that I loved music. I loved dancing. I loved everything about. I loved the praise that I got for. I always said there was something about it. Like, I was a nobody, and nobody would give me the time of day. A female wouldn't even give me the time of day outside of the club. But inside the club, hey, everything was different. I got all the attention, right? And there was something about that. Now, I can look back at that with great fondness, right? But you know what? You know what it reminds me? It was temporary. It was temporary. Oh, I can still dance. Yeah, I got no problem. You turn on music, I can probably still dance better than a lot of younger people. But guess what? It doesn't look the same. It's not the same because now I'm older and it's just not the same. That was a temporary time in my life and it's gone. So it's everything in life is, it's not eternal. Everything in life is there's mortality is attached to it. It's all going to die and go away. So whatever we cling to, for the Christian, our reward is God himself, which is eternal, and it doesn't go away. It doesn't fade. There's no defect in it. There's no lack in it. God is our reward, and if we could get a better grasp of this, it would be so revolutionary to how we live our Christian life. All of our problems in life, spiritually speaking, flows from we don't see God as our exceeding great reward. I truly believe this. It comes from a lack of satisfaction. It comes from a lack of contentment. When we lose contentment and satisfaction in God, we always look to something else. We look to something, and it's always, we look to something to boost our pride. We look something to please our flesh. We look at something to please our eyes, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It's appealing because it appeals to the very nature, our sinful nature, which does not find its satisfaction in God. It only wants satisfaction in what we can see, what we can feel, and the pride and how it builds us up. God is our exceeding great reward. And so I'll just read those one more time. And I hope I was able to accomplish something here today. I hope so. I apologize for anything I messed up. And if you were reading along, you notice I just skipped some words or anything that I thought was going to present me a problem. I do that anyway, even on a good day. Forget a day where I'm struggling with some neurological issues. All right. God is a satisfying reward. God is a suitable reward. God is a pleasant reward. God is a transcendent reward. God is an infinite reward. God is an honorable reward. And God is an everlasting reward. Now, Thomas Watson, if I've said Thomas the Kempis at any point, I apologize. Thomas Watson goes much further into this. Please look at it. Please look at what he has to say. And by all means, share your thoughts and opinions on it. Genesis 15, verses 1 through 6. God speaks to Abram, says, hey, don't fear. I'm your shield. I am your great reward. Abram immediately turns around and says, hey, what can you give me? What are you going to do for me? God explains to him how things are going to work. Abram believes that, and it is counted to him as righteousness. We, because of that imputed righteousness, we can realize that we too, we have nothing to fear because we have imputed righteousness. God is our shield because he's our imputed righteousness. He is our exceeding great reward because of that imputed righteousness, because of grace. And we need to focus on that. God is our exceeding great reward so that all of the spiritual dangers that arise from discontentment, all of the spiritual dangers that arise for not being satisfied with God and God alone, that we can fight against those dangers by being able to say, God is my exceeding great reward. And if the doctrine of imputation does not make you completely content in God, then you're missing the great reward you have received. Can you imagine that you as a sinner, you have been given the absolute perfect righteousness of the eternal Son of God. His obedience in keeping the law has been given to you. His obedience has been given to you. So in your position, you're perfectly obedient, you're perfectly holy, and in his death, he washed away all your sins, so you've been completely forgiven. All of that's been given to you by God. He is your exceeding great reward because you now have the very righteousness of God accredited to you. If that does not bring a sense of satisfaction, then you're clearly looking at things from a very earthly perspective. Now, I'm just like you. I struggle with a lack of wanting to be satisfied in so many different ways. I have desires and I have struggle and I struggle and I want that satisfaction just like you do. I don't know what it is in your life, but whatever it can be, most of our fights in marriage or in any other place is because we want something. We want whatever we want and we're not getting what we want. We want you to go, we want my way. We want it. And it's because we're longing for us to be the issue. And that's because we're not focusing on that God is our exceeding great reward. God being your exceeding great reward should bring complete contentment and satisfaction. But our sinful nature always looks to something else. Okay, I'll stop right there. You can email me at newsif@yahoo.com, newsif@yahoo.com, newsif@yahoo.com. I truly hope that I was able to accomplish this. I apologize. I hate to end the week of Bible study with giving you a subpar Bible study exercise. Now, some of you may say, well, this one is pretty much on par with everything else you do. Well, that's probably true, okay? Because even on my best day, it's subpar. But I definitely have that feeling that this wasn't wonderful, but I did the best I could. But I didn't want to leave the week of Bible study without at least trying to accomplish that. So I hope that in spite of neurological issues, I was able to accomplish something. Well, I should say, let's do this. Let's say it this way. I'm going to say it this way. Let's hope that in spite of my weakness that is present today, that God will work, transcend that weakness and accomplish his purpose in this very important study. I would challenge you to read everything Thomas Watson had to say, and by all means, if there's anything in Genesis 15, 1 through 6, I really mean this. If there's anything else in Genesis 15, 1 through 6, if there's anything about the doctrine of imputation, or if there's anything else in the words that Thomas Watson wrote that's on the blog, all you got to do is let me know, and then we'll just, as we go through next week doing the next week's study, we'll just do some additional studies and add and come back and try to finish this up and add to it. I've got no problem doing that because I definitely want to ensure that you are not cheated out of anything because of my weakness. All right. So I definitely just, all you got to do is say, well, you didn't really cover this and I didn't think you did a good job, and I will definitely fix it. All right. Now, I'm going to try to find a way home. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make my way home and hopefully have a good rest of the day. And we'll see. We'll see. So thank you very much. Thanks, Heather, for praying. Thanks, Will, for the thumbs up. I greatly appreciate that. And hopefully, most importantly, you gain something from this study. All right. Everyone have a great day. God bless.